I'm going to start off with the presentation which I put together over the last couple of weeks. I've made this actually into a video. Really, it's to kill two birds with one stone, because Paddy and others have been badgering me to produce some material for the website. So it would be nice to get people's feedback on how this presentation works out. Then after the presentation, it lasts just over 15 minutes, I've got another YouTube video, which is just over 10 minutes, from a woman called Mad Blender, who's quite an interesting character. It's good quality video. So we're about 25 minutes. And then once the videos are completed, then we'll obviously take some questions, and I look forward to people's feedback. So I'll start here off. Welcome to the presentation on Murray Bookchin and social ecology. We'll start with a brief introduction on Murray Bookchin.
Needs to be louder.
Of social ecology. Why Murray Bookchin believed hierarchy within society ultimately determines the way we see the natural world.
Yeah, Howard's right. It needs to be certain levels too low.
You can turn up the level on your own screen.
Resource for further study.
There's a slider.
Done that. Social ecology.
Yeah, done that.
A summary of what we've covered. I'm going to recommend a short, you follow a short video on YouTube on social ecology.
Yeah, that doesn't work.
How about that?
Your sound level's great.
Described as one of the most provocative, exciting, and original political thinkers of the 20th century.
Wind that up as far as it will go.
His critics mockingly described Bookchin as Smokey the Bear. In many ways, this is a fitting depiction, for Bookchin was gruff, solid, down to earth, enraged at the present state of the world, and committed to doing something about it. His philosophy of nature could be described as evolutionary naturalism, and in terms of his radical politics, libertarian socialism. Taken together, he coined the term social ecologist. He's largely been ignored by many academic scholars writing on green philosophy and the history of the ecology movement. Bookchin was born in 1921 in the east side of New York. His parents were Russian Jewish immigrants. Both were active in the Communist Party, which probably explains why he became politically active himself at the ripe old age of 9, joining the Young Pioneers at the time. Bookchin learnt his public speaking skills from many communist and socialist union reps on the street corners of New York City during the Depression in the 30s. As an adult, he became a union rep himself in the steel mills and the automotive plants. After the war, he started a writing career, public speaking and teaching, authoring some 25 books and numerous articles. He coined the term social ecology in the early 1970s. Bookchin was an expert on Marx. He read the complete works of both Marx and Engels, all 68 volumes. In the 1950s, he split with Marx and became an anarchist. By the end of the 60s, anarchism was consumed by the rise of spiritualists, primitivists, and new left postmodernists, such as John Zerzan, Tom Hayden, Hakim Bey, and his temporary autonomous zone. Bookchin, being a dialectical materialist, cut his ties with this new anarchist movement to pursue his own ecological socialism. Development of a human society. In the primitive world of hunter-gatherers and tribal societies, there was a primordial equality and an absence of coercive and domineering values. A feeling of unity between the individual and the kin community. A sense of communal property with an emphasis on mutual aid. An ecological sensibility involving a relationship with a world that was one of reciprocal harmony, not of domination. Over time, men used their superior physical strength to elevate the virtues of the male role over the virtues of the female role. Elders and priests achieved domination through the knowledge of the world and the gods, and protected their status through military force. In a simplistic sense, this is how hierarchy evolved. Hierarchical domination, however coercive, is not the same thing as class exploitation. This is perhaps where Bookchin diverges from Marxist biologist Barry Commoner, and in the SPGB pamphlet, Ecology and Socialism, which argues the pure Marxist position of capitalist domination of the worker. This reflects Bookchin's split with Marx in broadening the social conflict to include every member of society, not just worker and capitalist. Bookchin sees both first nature, the natural world, and second nature, human society, as an incomplete process. He says, or what we have now with its anthropocentric halo as the basis of a creative biosphere. We must go beyond both the natural and the social towards a new synthesis that contains the best of both.
And finally, with the emergence of the market system, we have almost completed the process of organizing all experience hierarchically and relating to everything in a domineering manner. Because in the anonymity of the buyer-seller relationship, which is broken through all the ties of family structure, of neighborhood and community, of religious belief, of every type of philosophical, emotional commitment on the part of human beings, and every form of sensibility, we have finally turned everything into an object that we either buy or we sell. Until finally now we buy ideas. I don't buy that, we say. To which I invariably respond, I'm not selling it.
Bookchin, along with Barry Commoner, writing in the 70s, emphasized that we were confronting a severe ecological crisis unprecedented in human history, and that its roots lay with an economic system, capitalism, that is geared not to human well-being, but to the generation of profit, and envisage no limits to industrial expansion. For the underlying ethic of capitalism was indeed the technological domination of nature, an anthropocentric ethic that viewed the biosphere as having no intrinsic value. Most apologists cite technology or population growth as the cause of the environmental crisis. For Bookchin, this is not the case. The root cause is trade for profit and industrial expansion. Grow or die. Bookchin quoted, "We shouldn't focus on the symptoms of this grim social pathology, but the root cause, the pathology itself, capitalism." The Socialist Standard article, Ecology and Socialism, 1999, reflects Barry Commoner's views of ecology as outlined in Closing the Circle, which was published in 1971. Although this was a bestseller, it's currently out of print, but you can still find a copy on the internet for around £10. Bookchin's political vision is the need to establish popular democratic assemblies based on municipality, on neighbourhoods, towns or villages. Such local assemblies rely on face-to-face democracy to make policy decisions relating to the management of community affairs. These municipalities self-govern through a network of confederal councils with recallable delegates to negotiate on behalf of those assemblies. Buxin summed up his own conception of his anarchist politics in terms of four base tenets. One, a confederation of decentralised municipalities. Two, an unwavering opposition to statism. Three, a belief in direct democracy. And four, a vision of a libertarian communist society.
Can we build a program of the future? Radical, that speaks in English, not in German, not in Russian, not in Chinese, with all due respect to these movements. And that speaks to them on the level that is most intimate in their lives, their neighborhoods, which are in a state of dissolution, their communities, which are in a state of dissolution today, their blocks, be it on the city level, or their towns, be it on a somewhat agrarian level. Can we not build out of that a movement? And that involves literally recreating again popular forms of organization that are acceptable to the American mind. The town meeting, at least in New England, various kinds of neighborhood groups in other parts of the country, and possibly even the town meeting may again sweep not over 13 colonies, but over 50 states. I don't.
If you are interested in finding out more, the website of the Institute of Social Ecology is a good place to start. It was founded by Murray Buxin and Dan Chordikoff in Vermont in 1974. The Institute offers online courses and has an extensive YouTube site with a lot of detailed podcasts on social ecology theory. With an extensive library of Murray Buxin's speeches and interviews, I would particularly recommend The Forms of Freedom speech, which is a sweeping history of revolutions in the last 100 years. Buxin had that talent of delivering a speech with a kind of rhythmic cadence, akin to Martin Luther King and Barack Obama, which makes him very easy to listen to. A summary. How we live our lives in society has a direct impact on how we deal with First Nature. Piecemeal reforms to capitalism to date have not slowed the rise in global warming and continued the destruction of the ecosystem. Capitalism's insatiable appetite for ever-increasing resource will completely thwart any attempts to control its demands through quotas, irrespective of any agreements between nation states. Capitalists will always find a way around. We looked at the Institute of Social Ecology and found that as quite a useful resource. It's a tough ask, but we have to try and convince others that socialism is the only way out of this mess and saving the planet. The next slide shows some reference material, and then followed by suggesting a video on YouTube. Here are some links to some of the reference material I used in the presentation if you would like to follow it up. The Institute for Social Ecology, the website, the Socialist Standard magazine, Ecology and Socialism, from the SPG website, an essay by Murray Buxin entitled What is Social Ecology? And a book by Murray Buxin called The Ecology of Freedom. I would like to recommend a video that describes Buxin's ideas from Mad Blender. She's an active video blogger on Twitter and YouTube. She's got around 4,000 subscribers since 2016. A talented video editor and a good presenter focused on important issues for the left. You can find the video by searching for Mad Blender on YouTube. Thanks for watching the presentation. Please visit the SPGB website to find out more about our socialist ideas. Okay, I'm just about to start the video. Hopefully this will be a bit louder. We'll get to the issue.
We are currently facing a potentially global ecological crisis that becomes more dire with each passing day. Greenhouse gas emissions continue to rise. The pace at which our planet's biological diversity is dwindling is staggering. The soil, our oceans, forests, and fisheries are all being ravaged and our natural resources depleted. This is the world we as humans have created. Instead of one united world sharing resources and looking out for one another, we cling to nationalist pride, racism, and xenophobia, leaving us cold and indifferent towards the suffering of millions. This indifference, along with a systemic drive for prosperity over all else, has us replacing rainforests with commercial agriculture, soil with concrete, and complex ecosystems with simplified ones. To understand this link between human indifference and ecological devastation, I want to take a look at the theory of social ecology, which essentially understands all ecological problems as social problems. According to social theorist and political philosopher Murray Bookchin, the domination of nature by humans stems ultimately from the domination of humans by humans, and all of our social ills and by extension our ecological ills stem from domination and hierarchy. This is really what social ecology is all about. It takes a look at our place in nature from an evolutionary perspective and seeks to analyze problems that have arisen ecologically as a result of human intervention on the natural world. Bookchin thought that if ecological crisis stems from social relations, then in order to prevent further environmental devastation, we must create a rational, ethical, and liberatory society with decentralized and directly democratic communities. Social ecology is interesting because it not only contains within it a comprehensive negative program, meaning that it seeks to abolish established modes of hierarchy and domination, including capitalism, racism, sexism, basically all the isms, but it also establishes a reconstructive positive program centering libertarian municipalism and communalism, which I'll be discussing more in my next video. For this video, though, I want to dig deeper into how social ecology views human nature, domination, and hierarchy. Human nature. So many people have this idea. In fact, it seems to be the dominant narrative that competition, systems of domination, and hierarchy are just part of human nature, and that capitalism provides the optimal setup for a bunch of naturally self-interested individuals. But this really isn't the case. One way we can understand this is to examine nature and the creation of society from a dialectical perspective, specifically through dialectical naturalism. Dialectical naturalism seeks to explain how society developed out of nature and how the social and natural constantly interact with and depend on one another, while each still maintains their separate identities and integrity. It also provides us with a framework for understanding the unfolding of human history and how systems of domination and hierarchy were essentially developed. First nature, second nature, and free nature. So Bookchin breaks nature up into first nature, second nature, and free nature. First nature is the natural, biological, and non-social world, which is always evolving and always developing. Out of this evolutionary process came human beings, and based on the development of their large brains, their upright mobility, and locomotive functioning, they were placed in a unique situation which enabled them to create a social world all their own. We call this second nature. So second nature is society, or what Bookchin called institutionalized community, which evolved out of biological first nature, but maintains its own unique characteristics and identity. He makes sure to differentiate human communities or society from non-human communities. The way ants form communities, for example, is natural and instinctual. The way humans form communities is institutional, meaning intentionally organized, developmentally structured, and therefore distinctly human. The same goes for hierarchical relationships. Hierarchy requires an institutional setup that is top-down and authoritarian. There are set rules, intentionality, and this arrangement is designed to provide a framework for future generations. The relationships found in the animal kingdom, the predator-prey relationships, for example, is not hierarchical, but instinctual or natural. There is no forethought or intentional organization, at least not in the same way as humans. It's important to make these distinctions because people will often look to the natural world to justify their claims that human beings are naturally inclined to create systems of domination and hierarchy because, look, that's how it is in nature. They'll point to the pecking order among birds or the dominance hierarchies established in wolf packs and say, see, that's the natural way of things. In fact, this has been a tactic of the ruling elite throughout history as they sought to equate their socially constructed hierarchical institutions with a fixed and natural community life, as if these human-made systems of domination were unalterable and even biologically ingrained in the human species. This was simply used to prop up and maintain the power of the ruling class. But human nature is not some fixed, immutable thing. Humans are highly adaptive, and if we were to go back and look at the anthropological evidence of early primitive societies, if anything, we would conclude that human nature very much values empathy, cooperation, mutual aid, and solidarity. Furthermore, our views of nature seem to be a direct reflection of our views on society and the social relations between people, not the other way around. And this can also be seen throughout history. As social relations change, so do our views on nature. Looking again at primitive cultures, for example, they believed that every living being had a soul. Equality and community were integral to their outlook on life. Elders were respected, and so they viewed the natural world in much the same way. Private land and ownership was unheard of. Land and resources were communally shared and respected. They saw themselves as Mother Earth's children and so sought to live in harmony with the Earth. The dualism of Greek society was reflected in nature as well. For example, the slave master, man woman, polis countryside dichotomy was projected onto nature, and thus they saw nature as the separation or the divide of the cultivated and the wild, the orderly and the chaotic, to use Bookchin's description. Much of the medieval world saw nature as hierarchical, much like their society was hierarchical. They viewed the animal kingdom in terms of rank according to status, labeling the lion as the king of the beasts because they lived among kings, and described the lowly ants at the bottom as depicted by the lowly serfs at the bottom. Well, the same thing can be seen with the introduction of the market economy. The clans, tribes, even the extended family ties broke down and everyone became atomized, individualized, each person out for themselves, supposedly free to buy and sell as they please in the free, free market, and only the strong survive. An image of nature then emerged, a system of individual beings fighting for survival, a Darwinian predator versus prey world where natural selection and survival of the fittest dominate, which perfectly aligns with the dog-eat-dog capitalist versus workers society of the 18th, 19th, 20th, and 21st century. And now we reside in an era of corporate neoliberal capitalism, an era of super quantification concerned with accumulation, laws of supply and demand, and prices. I mean, we've created a new quantifiable nature. Nature itself has become a type of corporation, a type of computer even. So the point is that there really is no way to objectively observe and study the natural world without bringing our own human interpretations into the mix. To quote Bookchin, whenever we deal with nature, we are dealing with it not from our experience of the world, not even from the laboratory experience of the natural world, but from our experience in our interaction with each other. And if we live in a society of domination, then our attitude towards nature is going to be a domineering attitude, an outlook premised on the supposition that nature itself is a mere object of manipulation. Once a culture of domination and hierarchy was established among humans, a culture of dominating nature was not far behind. Without the forming of these hierarchical relations in society, humans would not have had the thoughts in their mind to dominate nature. There would have been no reason to enclose land, create private property, and hoard natural resources if not for these relationships of power that had already been developed. And now today, we're headed into absolute ecological devastation based on these systems of domination. And this brings us to third nature, or free nature, which is second nature essentially harmonizing with first nature in order to become free nature, or in Bookchin's words, nature rendered self-conscious in a rational and ecological society. This would mean human beings pretty much, you know, using their intelligence and technological capabilities for good instead of bad. For example, instead of continuing the incredibly harmful practice of monocropping, which leads to soil degradation and loss of biodiversity, we could use our seed-saving capabilities to reintroduce diverse systems of agriculture. Instead of feeding nearly 40% of the world's grain to livestock that's then consumed secondhand by humans, we could instead feed 800 million additional people directly without killing those animals in the process. The problem isn't humans, it's not human nature, and it's not technology. What social ecology shows is that the problem is the setup of our current society. Social relations that place competition and self-interest and eternal growth above all else. A system that employs technology and machines in a way which not only destroys the environment, but seeks to inevitably render workers redundant, useless. In Karl Marx's Grundrisse, a section titled Fragment on Machines talks about a transition to a post-capitalist society that harnesses automation and other technological advances in a way which shortens the working day. It allows people the freedom to pursue their creative interests, spend quality leisure time with their loved ones, and, as Bookchin later argued, more time to participate in the political realm, which he thought was super important. Instead of using advances in machinery to squeeze more work out of people in an ever-increasing search for more profit, instead of inequality running rampant and billionaires living side by side with the poverty-stricken, machines could be used to liberate us from work and to live in harmony with nature, essentially creating a post-scarcity society. Bookchin and Marx both saw this potentiality. They differed, however, in what they saw as the fundamental problem holding us back from our potential. Instead of blaming capitalism like Marx, Bookchin argued that the cause of our current societal and ecological ills stems ultimately not from capitalism, but from systems of domination and hierarchy that began long before the implementation of markets and capitalism, but also necessarily includes capitalism. In my next video, I'm going to talk about Bookchin's reconstructive solution to these issues, mainly his political ideology of communalism, libertarian municipalism, and the influence that has had in Rojava. So yeah, if you liked this video, give it a thumbs up. As always, I'd love to hear your comments in the comment section below. Subscribe and share. So thanks so much for watching, guys.
That's the end of the presentation. I hope that a few people managed to hear it okay. So can you hear me, Paddy?
Yeah, I was just thinking we need somebody to chair the discussion. So if if everybody wants to click into the speaking queue, we should have done this before, actually. Does somebody want to volunteer to chair it?
Go on, then.
That's Brian's up for chairing it. Okay, thanks, Brian.
Right. Well, there's plenty there to get your teeth stuck into, I'm sure, you know, especially on the divergence of views between what is the cause for the ecological problems. I see John Cummins is typing that. I think in the speaking queue as yet. Mark said, okay, away you go, Mark.
Yeah, thanks very much for that. That was a very interesting. I guess probably my fundamental question is with the, you know, look, I agree, looking at the, maybe the comparing and contrasting Bookchin with Marx, I think the question I came away with was in relation to Bookchin's proposal for community democracy. Is that something that is that he conceives of as happening before the overthrow of capitalism, as part of the overthrow of capitalism, or does he see that as the way forward for a socialist society once capitalism has been overthrown? So I wasn't really clear as to where he stood on those questions. I hope that question is clear. So that's my question to the presenter today.
Okay, Mark. Thanks, Mark. It's probably what I've read of Murray Bookchin is it's probably all three of those things. His is a sort of emphasis on direct democracy. So rather than having representational democracy that we enjoy at the moment, he sees the way forward as being direct democracy with small groups. I mean, an analogy would be sort of down to the level of a small parish council, and then each of these small assemblies would then elect a delegate that would then be visit the next level up, which would be a confederation of these small assemblies. He emphasizes this idea of a delegate as well, so that somebody that has a mandate, but if they choose not to, or the assembly chooses, decides that that particular delegate isn't acting in the best interests or what was agreed, then they would be recalled. But very much a kind of different kind of politics where everyone gets involved all the time rather than just once every 4 years. So, and he kind of sees that as an evolutionary goal, not something that could be achieved overnight, but, you know, sees a kind of evolution towards it where we'd form, where small sort of study groups might form and spreading the word of socialism. I mean, to me, it seems very similar to the ideals of the party, really. I hope that answers the question. I think it's Paddy next year.
Yeah, Paddy next year.
Yeah, I just wanted to pick up something that the last video said right at the end. I don't know too much about Bookchin, so what she said was Bookchin diverges from Marx on the fundamental cause of the problem. And she says that, for Marx, the fundamental cause of the problem was capitalism. For Bookchin, it was any society with oppressive hierarchical institutions. And, I remember thinking at the time, well, hang on, that's what we think as well. And it seemed to me that, well, I mean, Bookchin read every single thing that Marx and Engels wrote, so surely he can't have got confused. But my understanding was, well, you know, Marx was writing about capitalism, you know, because he was living in capitalism. It's the society that's extant in his time and still is. And also because people don't really understand capitalism, and, you know, they keep coming up with all sort of ways of they think they can fix it, which won't work. But that's not to say that, you know, Marx was ever going to advocate a return to some previous or some other form of property society or hierarchical society, like a return to feudalism or chattel slavery. In that sense, I wonder if we don't ever, this is just speculation, you know, we in the SPG, we don't say often enough that we're actually opposed to any property society. if it was possible to have a another type of property society, private property, you know, with hierarchies that wasn't capitalism as we recognise it, we'd still oppose it, you know, for the, all the same reasons that Bookchin said. So I just wonder if Bookchin and Marx were really as divergent as that video sort of made out. Anyway, that's me.
Yeah, I think Bookchin was more concerned with his view was to kind of extend the argument or extend the involvement of rather than limiting the political differences just between the capitalist and the proletariat worker. What Bookchin kind of argued was he argued for a more inclusive confrontation, if you like, or to involve not just the worker, the proletariat, but also women, people working on the land, people that weren't involved directly with producing commodities. So he felt that Marx was too constrictive, in the sense that the argument was a class argument between the bourgeoisie and the proletariat. Bookchin wanted to expand beyond that, and I think that's one of his main arguments for moving away from Marx. Interestingly enough, though, when he did split from Marx towards the end of his life, he kind of eased back a little bit towards Marx, but that's another story. I guess it's Warwick now, is it?
Right, next we got Warwick.
Thank you. And thanks for that. I've never heard about, I think I've heard the term, but I never knew what it was all about, and it's been a really informative session, so thanks in the first instance. But I'd just like to go down the route of the political system, the idea of the direct democracy with delegates. And so the word, the Soviet Union, the word Soviet is exactly that, was intended to be exactly that. And the World Socialist Movement pointed out, even at the time of the Russian Revolution, that the Russian Revolution wasn't going to work because there wasn't the productive forces were developed, etc. But in terms of that Soviet system, which started, how did it go wrong? How does everyone think it went wrong? When did people, you know, when did the hierarchical or the bureaucracy develop and take over, or was it always there? Yeah, because this is about how humans behave, isn't it, really? And because when it's such a non-hierarchical system is going to depend on the behaviour of us as individuals in a group. Thanks.
Want to respond to that, Nick?
I'm not sure how to respond to that, actually. More of an open question. Should we go on to the next one?
Sorry, John, come in next.
I found a 12-page document on the internet written by Bookchin, and I couldn't find much, if any, divergence between him and Marx. I saw early on in the document, I didn't manage to get back and read the full thing, but I got two-thirds of the way through, so unless he said something really ridiculous in the last third, I don't see any real divergence. But one or two things bothered me slightly until he set me right a few sentences later. He was talking about spirituality, but within a few sentences he had clarified that he meant something quite different from what the adherents of supernaturalism, the believers in religious superstition, god worshippers and so forth, would be into. But I found his sort of explanation of that a bit unnecessarily complicated. But anyway, that was a minor criticism. And then later on, he talked about ethics, which is always troublesome. It's a thing that when I hear from one of the apologists of capitalism, I always say, ethics, is that south of Thuthick or north of Thuthick? Because I think that's the sort of seriousness most talk of ethics deserves. But in his case, he made it clear that he wasn't talking about the sort of hypocritical ethical talk that we get today. So all in, I think, also one other thing, he was right, I think, to be concerned about the destruction of communities. We talk about socialism being a society that will work in the interest of the whole community, but capitalism is almost, it would seem, systematically destroying communities. And there are no real communities in this society, very, very few. And that's a thing I think he's right to be concerned about. And how are we going to establish a world community if a lot of small communities have been almost snuffed out? So that's a problem for how people will develop from capitalism into socialism. But as I say, I don't think there were serious divergences in what I read so far, anyway.
John, were you referring to an article called Listen Marxist? Was that the article that you were reading? Because that article there that he wrote, I think in the early 60s, goes into a little bit more detail, fleshes out his disagreements with Marx.
Right.
So no, I can send you a link to that, actually, if you're interested. Or I can
That would be interesting. The thing I read was quite, I suppose, his basic case. It's called What is Social Ecology?
Okay, yeah.
Next up is Steve Finch.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks, Nick. Just a quick question. I think the title is Social Equality. And I might be wrong, but one of the bullet points on it is that Bookchin thought that if we managed to get rid of capitalism, that there would still be some sort of potential for hierarchies to. Now, how did he think that would occur if we've not got this relationship of this atomized relationship that we got under capitalism? How can anybody form? How can anybody take power, which is what I assume hierarchy means, if the means of production and distribution are held in common?
I'm not sure how to respond to that. Not quite sure where you were going with that.
Have I misinterpreted what Bookchin is about?
I think you might have, yeah.
Well, in that case, I apologise. I'll have to go back and look at the screen again. I do apologise.
I can make my notes available, my speaker's notes, which go into this in a bit more detail. I'll put those. Put those on an appropriate place on the website. That might help, actually. And then you can respond to that.
Okay, thank you.
Maybe use the blog. It's so good.
Okay.
Next is Jane and Tony.
Okay. Well, I was just thinking at the very end of that... that video, she mentioned Rojava.
No, we didn't actually hear that. Perhaps you could send us a text or something or a message in the message queue and I can answer it that way.
Just try again now.
Okay, I'll try once more. Can you hear me now?
Yep.
Fine now. Go ahead, Tony.
Okay. At the end of that video, she flashed up Rojava, i.e. the Kurdish area of northeast Syria, And that's based on Murray, supposedly based on Murray Bookchin's ideas. And it's based on, and its fundamental premise is that the first oppression is the oppression of women, and and that in fact the consequence of that in the reality in Rojava is that there is class analysis has kind of shrunk into an almost zilch. So I think that's. But it's Janet Beale, when Butchkin's ex-partner, has been touting Rojava, and I think even written books about it. So it's very much part of their riff. So I just thought that was interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I haven't really studied what's going on in Rojava myself, but you know. So I can't really comment on you know what's been achieved there. There was a video on TV from an ex diplomat name I can't remember that went into it with a little bit more detail. I don't think obviously they've been able to implement you know a society to come close to what Bookchin's ideals were. I mean it's still effectively a war zone in that area of the world.
Right. Next we have Howard. Thank you.
Brian, can Adam go before me? Because I suspect he's going to say the same kind of thing as me, but better. I'll go after him.
Right. Adam, the platform is yours. Yes, please unmute, Adam.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I was going to answer the thing about the Soviets. I mean, the Soviet system in theory is similar to what Butchkin says. It's a system of indirect election. In other words, there'll be no centrally elected assembly. The lower Soviet will... next committee, and the next committee will elect a delegate to the one above. Now, I'm not sure that is the best way to organize democracy. But anyway, in Russia, the Soviets never were that system never was implemented. It was always the Bolshevik Party that was in control, and they manipulated the Soviets. So I don't think that system was tried, but I think it's still open to criticism, that type of basic, you know, the only chance people get to vote is at the lowest level. I'm not sure, as I say, that's necessarily the best form of democracy. But I wanted to say something about listen, Marxist. Butchkin, after he left the Communist Party, joined a Trotskyist group. As well, he was the German Trotskyist group, or the descendants of the German Trotskyist group. So listen, Marxist should really have been called listen, Leninist, because he's not criticizing Marx in there. He's criticizing the idea of the Vanguard Party and various other ideas. There was, in fact, a reply in the Socialist Standard in December 1969 called Listen, Anarchist, where the author... points out that you know makes that point. So I think we would be careful that when he criticised Marx, he was actually criticising Lenin, or at least a Leninist of Marx. So anyway, I hope Howard, that is what you were going to say. Okay, thanks.
Okay, Howard, all you were saying.
Yes, I was indeed going to answer exactly the same question. The point that Warwick brought up about, you know, why the Soviet system failed. And I thought, to a certain extent, Warwick answered his own question by sort of prefacing it in saying that the view of the Socialist Party, even in 1917, 1918, was that Russia was not sufficiently developed. The productive forces were too backward for socialism to be established there. And indeed, from the very beginning, what happened there was that you had a dictatorship of not of the proletariat, but of a small minority of leaders who quickly took over and took power, remarkably, it might seem, in historical perspective, but they did. And so there was no question then that any kind of equal society of the kind that Murray Bookchin talked about was going to develop, and it didn't. The Socialist Party never stopped saying that at the time, that you were not going to have socialism as we conceive it anyway in Russia. And, that has never happened.